Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, December 22nd. 9 days to go in 2021. Let's talk about the biggest Pinocchios of the year. What's a Pinocchio? Well, as the year winds down, you may be seeing a whole bunch of those year-end lists and roundups, you know, best music, best books, best movies, worst trends, all that. But in this age of disinformation, there is also some value in reflecting on some of the biggest, most pervasive lies we heard over the last year, too. January 6th and stolen election lies, obviously. Pandemic science lies, obviously. But also other things. So with us now is Glenn Kessler, editor and chief writer of The Fact Checker for The Washington Post. His year-end roundup is a list of the biggest Pinocchios of the year. They grade the statements of public officials on a scale of Pinocchios from 1 to 5. Hi, Glenn. Thanks for doing this with us. Early Happy New Year. Welcome to WNYC today.
Yeah, happy to be with you. I should fact check you. We grade from 1 to 4. So.
Oh, 1 to 4. Okay. For some reason, that 4 looks so big to my eye, it expands to 5. Right. So the Washington Post grades statements of public officials on a scale of Pinocchios from 1 to 4. So there it is. Correction. And remind everyone in general, first, about how you award Pinocchios throughout the year.
Well, we have a column. We try aim for at least 5 times a week, and we focus particularly on statements made by politicians or political figures or advocacy groups, and then we judge the accuracy of those statements on a scale, as I said, from 1 to 4. There's also another thing called the Geppetto checkmark. That's when it's absolutely, completely true. Though we tend to reserve that for statements that are unexpectedly true. Something that you hear that you think, oh, that has to be false, but it turns out to be true. We don't fact check, you know, things that, you know, you would assume are true. And one Pinocchio means it's a little off. You might look at that as almost mostly true. Two Pinocchios is kind of like half true. Three Pinocchios, it's getting to be mostly false. There's serious factual problems with that. And then 4 Pinocchios is whoppers. And then when we do the biggest Pinocchios of the year, we select the most important, biggest claims that had merited 4 Pinocchios during the course of the year. So,
That's the list we're going to go down right now. And just to reinforce, this should be obvious to people, but you're talking about public officials, advocacy groups, things like that in the public eye. So Uncle Jim, who says on Facebook that the COVID vaccine makes you magnetic, he doesn't make it into the Washington Post, right?
Right. I mean, occasionally we'll fact check viral content, and that at least one thing in particular ended up on our list. But generally, we focus on people in power, people that have a ability to make a difference in public life with their words and actions. I mean, that was one reason why we tried our best not to fact check Donald Trump much this past year. Occasionally we had to venture into it, but he's an out of work ex-president. Maybe he'll run again. If he does, then we'll start fact checking him on a more regular basis.
Yeah, I think that was a dilemma, maybe the word is, for a lot of news organizations this year. We certainly dealt with it here on the show. The impulse to ignore Trump because he was out of office, and why give him the spotlight, especially if he's going to lie so much, versus he's having real influence in the body politic still, so it's important to fact check him. How did you walk that line?
Well, what we looked for were new things he said. You know, I mean, the one thing about Trump is that he's awfully repetitive, and he just keeps adding to his arsenal of lies. I mean, in fact, we even published a best-selling book in 2020 called Donald Trump and His Assault on Truth, because we had been cataloging every false and misleading statement he made during his presidency. At the time we wrote the book, it was 16,000. By the time he left office a year later, it was 30,000. It's something I never want to go through again, as I lost my life to keeping up that database. So if he said something that was fresh or new that was generating interest among readers and they wondered whether or not that was correct. So, for instance, he said the U.S. had left $85 billion worth of military equipment in Afghanistan. Well, that was a issue that people wanted to know because it got a lot of wide traction. And it wasn't just Trump, but it was other right-leaning figures that said it. And we did a comprehensive look, at one point at the variety of statements he was still making about the election, because he had kind of narrowed it down to what was happening in particular swing states. And while we had fact-checked it very carefully, when he was president, there were new things he'd added to his arsenal of falsehoods related to, the audits and things like that. So if there was something fresh or new, we would do a fact check on it, but we wouldn't do the routine, easily fact-checked BS that Trump is known for.
So let's go down the list. And I can't tell actually from my reading of it whether you've ranked these Pinocchios as the biggest lie of the year, the second biggest lie of the year, or if you just aggregated them. But to my eye, the first one that's in the article, at least the way it displays for me on the site, is a Trump lie having to do with the stolen election, correct?
Right. There's not necessarily a list. We put it in an order that we think keeps up people's interest. It's not like one ranks above the others, but obviously I would say in this case, number one and two, they're kind of connected, which is the continuing election lies, and the second one, the January 6th falsehoods. I mean, literally January 6th was a consequence of the things Trump had been saying about the election. And then the fact that he continued to say it and it continued to have impact, it's technically not an order, but there was a reason why.
Let's take one from your January 6th lies category from Trump. You wrote, Trump falsely claimed that he requested 10,000 troops to protect the Capitol, but that request was rejected by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. What's the truth?
The truth is that this is an excuse that Trump and his supporters have kind of suggested gives him an out for having nothing to do with January 6th, that he supposedly had ordered that there be 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the Capitol, and that Nancy Pelosi had rejected it. So it was kind of like her fault, he wanted to put the troops there. What really happened was Trump had had a meeting on Iran with a bunch of officials, including the defense secretary. And offhandedly, he said, there are going to be like a million people coming to my march on January 6th. You're probably going to need 10,000 troops there. And, the Pentagon officials, we now know, were actually really worried that Trump was going to, order the military to actually execute a coup. And so they just didn't really take him up on this. There was no order. It was like an offhand comment. And it was based on Trump's inflated idea of how many people would show up, because it wasn't a million. It wasn't even 100,000. It was maybe 20,000, 25,000 people showed up on the mall that day. So, but it's, like often with Trump, there's like a element of truth there that he then expands into a total falsehood. So he made a comment, it was not to protect the Capitol. It was, from what I've learned from my reporting, it was kind of like he wanted those troops there to protect his supporters. It had nothing to do with the Capitol. He just didn't want, he was afraid that Antifa or something would show up to go after his million supporters.
Before we get off election-related lies, you have one that is from Joe Biden that you put on your biggest Pinocchios list. And this may surprise people. It's about the new Georgia election law, which I think many people do legitimately consider restrictive in a way that, you know, runs counter to voting rights. But you cite a lie from Joe Biden. The quote is, Georgia's new law ends voting hours early so working people can't cast their vote. Give us the context for that and why it made your list of biggest Pinocchios of 2021.
Right. For this is it is correct to say that there are many a number of aspects in that Georgia law that do restrict voting or make it harder for people to vote. For instance, they reduced the number of drop boxes to just one in every county. And there were some certain counties, the populous counties, where they had many drop boxes brought in during the pandemic. What we focused on was something that Biden said not once, not twice, but I think it was like three times. And he said things like, among the outrageous parts of this new state law, it ends voting hours early, so working people can't cast their vote after their shift is over. You know, it's sick deciding that you're going to end voting at 5 o'clock when work people are getting off work. And, you know, we hold a president to a very high standard because they have the biggest megaphone on earth. And there's simply nothing correct in what Biden said there. And it was one of those instances where the White House never really, you know, they generally try to work hard with us to kind of explain or defend what the president said. Mm-hmm. In this case, they never tried to defend what they said or what he said. It made it actually even in a statement that he issued, which meant that it had been vetted by some officials. The law made some changes to early voting, but the net effect of these early voting rules was to expand opportunities to vote for most Georgians, not to limit it. And that's what every expert we talked to said. So, you know, he had some cause to complain about aspects of that law, but one of the things he focused on and that he said talked a number of times about was simply totally incorrect. So that's why we put it on the list.
Here's a tweet from a listener who says, I love the Post's fact checker, but does he think there are any consequences these days for multiple Pinocchios? Does it feel thankless?
You know, I've been doing this for 11 years, and this is a question people always ask me. I have to say that in general, I know that President Biden is a reader of the fact checker, because he's commented on it. And often when we say this is incorrect, he stops saying it after we've done our fact check, or he might adjust the way he says it. And that sort of reaction we would also see from people like President Obama, Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, just to name a few people that pay attention to fact checks and are concerned about keeping their facts.
Some from each party, I notice you're mentioning there.
Right, right.
But if you've been doing this for 11 years, I'm curious if you think that media outlets have previously been more reluctant to just call a lie than they are today.
No, I think Trump changed the standards there, and because you were faced with a politician who had didn't seem to care that he was called out for saying things that were false, and he would often double down or triple down. So at some point, you got to do we declare that this is a lie? And the word lie is something that we rarely, if ever, use at the Washington Post, let alone at the fact checker. And part of the problem with Trump is that he gets to believe his own lies, and you can't get into someone's head. You know, how do I know that they knowingly think that this is false? So one notable example is we declared it was a lie when he said he never paid money to his alleged paramours, to keep them silent during the 2016 campaign. And in that case, we made that decision to label it a lie because there were audio recordings released by his former aide, Michael Cohen, which showed him discussing the payments. So we could with confidence say that was a lie. But, you know, a lot of times, and you saw there were with Trump, there were policy implications because he would make policy decisions based on falsehoods that he had himself had said so often that he came to believe it was true, even though it was demonstrably false.
And I think the pressure to start calling a lie more explicitly in the press really started, at least sort of in the modern context, not under Trump, when everybody started doing it much more because his lies were so blatant, like you say, but during Bush, when there were all these what people considered lies about the Iraq War, and, you know, they were too often couched in more subtle language. Remember Al Franken's book? The title was something like "The Lying Liars and the Lies They Lie About." That isn't it exactly, but it was something like that. And it had to do with the Bush-Cheney regime.
Right. And, you know, but to be fair to Bush, and, you know, I once did a whole series where I talked about the biggest falsehoods told by different presidents. And we went back to Nixon and stuff. And I did include the rhetoric about weapons of mass destruction by George W. Bush. But, you know, a question that's never totally been answered is, did he know that when he was saying there were weapons of mass destruction, that he knew there were none there? Or did he, you know, there was a lot of groupthink going on there. And did he really just look, he looked at the evidence and believed, you know, it was, you can look now at what the intelligence report said. The intelligence reports in the main were saying, yes, there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but it was based on lousy intelligence or lying defectors. There were dissents there by different agencies, particularly the Energy Department, saying, no, these aluminum tubes have nothing to do with nuclear weapons. But, you know, that was a caveat. So, you know, you can fault him for very bad decision-making, but can you sit there and say, oh, he knowingly knew that this was false? Or was he just incompetent and didn't really fully read the full report? Just look at the summary. I mean, it was a, you know, it's a, you know, Robert, Senator Bob Graham, he talked about how he was one of the very few senators to actually read the whole thing. And he had to go to a, you know, secret bunker and you know, a shift, what do they call it, and, you know, read it, and couldn't take it out, couldn't bring staff. And when he walked out of there, he decided this is all completely false. It's exaggerated. So anyway, I'm not trying to defend George W. Bush.
I understand.
But I'm just trying to provide the context of like how difficult it is to label something exactly as a lie.
Sarah in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Good morning. You may have actually addressed some of the things that I called in about just now, which most importantly is calling lies lies. although I appreciate that these are the Pinocchios and the reference there. It's very concerning that the press in general doesn't, it seems to me in general, doesn't call lies what they are, and especially when they're such high consequence lies. So you actually just dove deep into that topic a minute ago, which is what I had called in really about. But the other thing that I would mention is, beyond just calling it a lie, is it would be interesting to see, I almost picture it like a table, like an Excel table, of seeing the particular lie, how many times it was repeated, and by whom. I think that would be a tough thing to do, but it speaks to the fact that what you have is this sort of number at which it gets repeated by so many people that it's believed. And I think that's something that the public really needs to understand, and not in subtle language at all, but really needs to get hit over the head with that message, not just subtly.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Sarah, because actually earlier in our conversation, Glenn, you mentioned sometimes the statements that get Pinocchios in the Washington Post aren't things said by public officials, but things that go viral on social media. You have at least one of these on the list that I'll mention in a second. But you want to talk about that context to Sarah's concern? Is social media itself sometimes the earner of a Pinocchio?
Right. Well, you know, in the more than in the decade that I've done this, social media has certainly become a bigger part of what we have to track and fact check. One thing we've specialized in is identifying manipulated video that might appear on social media feeds or on YouTube. The Washington Post set out a whole scale for evaluating that, which is being adopted by Google to label things with. And because one big problem you have with social media is someone might take a little bit of a clip of, say, Joe Biden and then label it misleadingly. And then it becomes like this meme, like this happened.
Let me throw in one more, because we didn't touch vaccine misinformation at all yet in this conversation. And maybe you don't need to, because our listeners know there's so much vaccine disinformation as well as misinformation. You know, I guess, well, do you make that distinction? Like, misinformation is just stuff people get wrong. Disinformation is stuff people purposely say that they know is wrong. And then talk about your category, which is Ron Johnson's campaign of vaccine misinformation.
Right. Ron Johnson is a purveyor of all sorts of false and misleading claims about the coronavirus.
Republican senator from Wisconsin.
Right, right. So we had done a number of fact checks explaining over and over why what he was saying was wrong. I mean, one thing he would often say, like, there would have been more than 5,000 deaths, you know, reported to this. And that he's referring to something known as the vaccine adverse event reporting system. But there's like no causal link. It's just like anyone can, make a statement there or a claim. But he was acting as if it was real. And it was a part of an effort to discourage people from taking the vaccines. So we felt it was important to call him out for that.
Misinformation versus disinformation, how do you choose which word to use?
Well, disinformation, I'm not sure in the end how important it is, the different distinction. I mean, in this case, every time we spoke to Ron Johnson and his staff, they were able to throw at us studies or documents or things like that to defend what he was saying. Because there could be 100 studies done. If you only pick the one study that supports what you're saying, right, and ignore the 99 others that say that what you're saying is wrong, that's not the way is that disinformation, or is that purposely misinforming people?
Glenn Kessler, Washington Post fact checker. His article, The Biggest Pinocchios of 2021. Thanks for sharing them with us.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.